With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. My name's David Reed, and with me as ever is Marek Larwood. Hello, Marek, how are you doing?
I am in a bad mood.
Oh, dear. Is it film-related?
It's work-related.
Okay.
So it is film-related.
You have too much work on.
I just want to explain the backstory. I've always said to you, why I'm in a bad mood is that I went for an audition for a one-line part.
Sure.
And this is not even the... I've already been in for an audition for the same thing before.
Sure, for the same line?
No, for a three-line part.
Okay.
Which I didn't get. So they thought, right. Oh, how about we get Marek in again? Another afternoon. Waiting around.
Yeah.
For a one-line part. Which I didn't get. It's really demeaning. Not to be offered the one-line part when they've already seen me for the three-line part.
Apparently Armando Iannucci used to just do straight offers for the smaller parts, just never audition anyone. Just like, yeah, of course they could do it.
Well, that's what happened when I got bits and extras and stuff like that. You just get parts.
Yeah.
But now you just go in, but I've already spent enough in doing a three-line part.
Yeah.
And do they not know how insulting that is? So rude, so demeaning. And what's worse, to not get it. I didn't go your... And to be told by your agent, it's a good opportunity.
Yeah.
I might make a film about that.
Do. Well, I'm sorry for your...
Loss.
Wasted life. Yeah, your loss of time.
Wasted life in general?
No, just this specific bit. I don't want to get into the rest. We'll never stop talking.
There's a guitar over there in the corner. We could do a song. We could do a...
Do you play the guitar?
No, I hope you could play
it. No, I can't play the guitar, no.
Oh, what?
That's Danielle Ward's guitar.
Maybe if I could play the guitar, things would have been different.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're not here to moan about our lives. Who wants to hear about that?
No one. That's who. As is reflected in our listenership statistics. We're here to talk about films. Now, we've watched some films on Netflix this week, being the most dominant, aggressive, marketed streaming service, which we're both subscribers to. I got an email recently that the subscription fee's gone up by about £1.50 a month. Have you seen that?
Oh!
Yeah, it's about £7.49 or something.
I'm only on it because my girlfriend went on a thing and then met a Netflix PR person.
Right.
And got a £50 voucher for Netflix.
£50?
Yeah.
So what do you get for £50?
Well, until it runs out.
Oh, I see.
But it's going to go, I thought it was
until November. But £7.49 doesn't go into 50, so you'll have some voucher left.
Yeah,
I'll
have about £3 left.
Weird.
Well, no doubt I'll forget about it and start paying. That's the plan. Netflix has started paying people to make films directly, like Ricky Gervais has done films.
Yeah. He did that one with Eric Banner, didn't he?
I watched the first 5 minutes of it.
How was it?
And I just thought, I'm not
in
the mood.
It must have gripped you if you've only watched the first 5 minutes.
Do you know, sometimes, I think specifically with Ricky Gervais, I think, I'm not in the mood to see Ricky Gervais' face.
Mm. Although I've enjoyed a lot of his telework, for all he's a bit of an obnoxious personality. Like, I like The Office and Extras, but... Yeah, I've never enjoyed him in a film.
When I watched his stand-up thing,
yeah,
you think, oh, he's not acting at all.
Yeah,
Anyway, I shouldn't. That's another chance of a part gone.
But Netflix, maybe this is why. Maybe it's this show. We're bad-mouthing all of the...
You're right. Yeah, I should say some nice things.
Yeah.
Oh, Ryan Gosling will put me in one of his films, I should think.
Channing Tatum owes us big for the number of times we've cast him in the casting game.
Because a lot of casting directors look at our casting game for inspiration for things.
I'm sure they do. They must do. I mean, they cast Christoph Waltz as the baddie in James Bond. We said that.
Yeah.
They cast Melissa McCarthy in Ghostbusters. We said that.
Yeah.
Didn't we? They haven't cast Louis C.K. as Winnie the Pooh yet, but it's only a matter of time.
So we need to start casting ourselves in these films.
Just every casting game. Me. It's me.
And then suddenly we'll get these Hollywood parts.
We'll put it out there in the ether. It just,
oh, it's interesting. Yeah, yeah. Interesting thought. I'll
try that.
I watched Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
Famous for not really ever making any good films, apart from, I think, Happy Gilmore, which I enjoyed.
Punch Drunk Love.
And Punch Drunk Love, yes.
And I've not rewatched it now that I'm an adult, but I used to enjoy The Wedding Singer.
I've only seen bits of that.
It's got some good bits, I remember. It's got a good supporting cast as well. It's got Steve Buscemi's in there.
Mm-hmm.
Billy Idol.
And Little Nicky's one of your favourites as well, isn't it, I think?
Oh, yeah, it makes me weep so much. No, I've not seen Little Nicky. Isn't Waterboy supposed to be all right?
It's a bit...
Is it a bit him doing a retarded voice?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
So he's got a 3-film deal, apparently, with Netflix.
Right.
And this, I thought I'd give one of them a go. Adam Sandler's quite interesting because there's something charming about him and likeable about him.
Mm.
But some of the things he does are really offensive.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
I thought The Do-Over was a jaw-dropping piece of cinema.
In what respect?
In that...
It just pushes boundaries, it makes you reappraise your entire worldview. Mm,
carry on.
It gives you the horn.
No, maybe going a bit more.
It makes you sad to be alive.
I was amazed that the... I sort of feel... That's me being speechless. That sound summed up.
Wow. And this is his first film he's made on his three-picture deal,
right? I can't
remember
if it's the first or the second one.
Because he's done a sort of Magnificent Seven parody recently. Is that Netflix?
I don't know.
It was the something... Is it something? Yeah, that's some decisive information for you. I'll look it up. So, tell me about this film.
I had to write down some of the lines.
Okay.
Because it was so incredible. So the story is David Spade's in it, who recognised him quite a lot of these similar sort of slapstick sort of crude comedy films.
Yes, sort of Rob Schneider style. Who's the other one who's in all of these films? Paul Blart Mall Cop.
Yes,
Kevin James.
Yeah, that style.
Yeah, that style.
So.
Well, David Spade's also in Ridiculous 6, the film I was trying to think of.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's a school reunion. David Spade's life isn't going very well. He meets Adam Sandler, who's an FBI agent. They then have one of the most blatant exposition scenes.
Yeah.
Here are some lines. Okay. Where do you live? Have you still got the same piece of shit car you used to drive? So basically everything is the same. I drive the same car, I have the same job, I chase the same girl. What the hell happened to my life? I wish I could start from scratch. Get it right this time. What do you think happens?
Does he start from scratch and get it right this time?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, there is a scene when they're talking to each other about what they've done for their past lives.
Yeah.
Where there are no... There's nothing other than a person telling the other person what used to be.
Okay.
Oh, why did we stop hanging out? You were in the thick glasses. Yeah. Well, I was with the clever kids. Are you going to be an FBI agent? What do you know? What do I know? I'm a bank manager. It was... I don't really know. I was just typing so fast.
Yeah.
There was nothing... It's equivalent of you saying... me saying to you, oh, your name is David Reed. You're an actor and a writer, and you live in Camden.
But it's that tiny bit of trying to justify it, but in an incredibly lazy way. Like, just going, you would say that, being Marek Larwood, who's a writer and comedian living in London.
It was not even disguised like that.
Yeah.
I think, in terms of exposition in cinema, this was a full 5 minutes just of exposition.
Okay.
And they didn't really need to do that, because they didn't, stay with the plot anyway. And then there was some... I've seen product placement before.
We've all seen Spectre.
But this would... There's a scene... So it does that exposition scene. Then it starts another scene on a bottle of Corona. As he's daydreaming.
Sure.
But it's not even in the background. It's focusing on... It's opening the shot.
Yeah.
On full focus on a bottle of Corona. Then he's in the background.
I mean, that's what you're doing in joke version of product placement,
and then
right?
It cuts to... him as a bank manager, this is David Spade, at his computer, but it doesn't open on him by his computer. It opens on the words ACR on the back of his computer, and it fades out. It's
blatant.
Well, I was gobsmacked. I was gobsmacked.
That's amazing. Product placement has gotten so silly, though, hasn't it?
This has, and there's a Bud Light. There's a bit of saying, "Do you want a Bud Light?" And they said, "Let's have a." And they've got a box of Bud Light, and that's just the main thing in there. But
to go back to it, just because I noticed it recently, is the James Bond films have gotten ridiculous for it. Like, it used to be that they were chock full of product placement, but at least they were sort of aspirational brands, you know, Aston Martin and whatever it is, you know. But now he talks about Heineken all the time.
Mm.
Like, it's just like, can I get a beer? Heineken? Great! Just like,
I mean, no one would say, if you're in a bar, someone said Heineken, you go, got anything else?
Yeah, exactly. But the idea of James Bond just having no fucking taste, I think is wonderful.
But even the one before that, what's it called? Would you denture the...
Skyfall.
There was a moment where it just... felt like there's a film cut and they put a watch advert.
Yeah, for Omega.
Yeah.
And that's in Casino Royale. It's been all of the Daniel Craig ones. There's a scene in Casino Royale where he first meets Vesper Lynd, and she goes, Rolex? And he goes, Omega. And she goes, nice. It's just like, what? That's not what people think about Omega watches.
And it's not cool as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You're just like a dick.
Use it. Rolex, Casio. Nice. Hey, are those Clark's shoes? That's some fancy shoes you're wearing, Mr. Bond.
I'd love it if James Bond wore Clark's shoes.
It'd be great. It'd be great.
Yes, they're the Right Start brand, or whatever they're called.
You're always so well tailored, Mr. Bond. Yes, I got this at TK Maxx. I'd sort of love it if they just went down that route instead. He's always carrying bags of Asta fish fingers around.
Yeah, that would be good. I've stopped watching Bond.
Yeah, it's all rubbish.
Anyway, so there's several scenes where Corona beer opens the... opens the scene.
Do you feel that Corona beer is a more in-depth character than Adam Sandler and David Spade?
Yeah.
Do you feel they had more to say?
I also think that Corona's quite a nice sort of lot. In my head, this is devalued Corona. Because Corona was a sort of the nice summer barbecue lager. You put a bit of lime in, whatever.
Yeah. A bit of Mexican sort of sunshine beer.
It doesn't really feel as though it's...
It's sullied.
Yeah.
With the taste of Adam Sandler.
And just when I thought this film had no hope, occasionally... It's written as though someone has got a writing job, and I was watching, I had the football on it at one point, looking at the scores in the football, and I thought, that's what the person did when they're writing this.
Yeah.
They clearly had something else on in the background, and they were just writing it and not reading it through.
Yeah.
And it was sent. It really feels like the whole thing was done like that.
As a writer, sometimes you just need to get something out onto the page rather than let yourself dry up, you know.
Mm.
So sometimes I've done it before where telling a story, I actually just write entirely functionally what needs to happen, as in they say to each other, you know, something cutting and horrible, and then, you know, blah blah blah. So maybe they just got to that stage and then had to hand it in. Maybe that's,
well, it's still, I mean, there's many more fascinating things to come. Just what I thought was going to be really shit, it made me laugh. One bit made me laugh out loud,
right?
And I think I laughed out loud three times, but probably because there were 3,000 attempts at jokes.
Okay.
In the whole thing,
right?
And occasionally, I think Adam Sandler and David Spade, they're both, oh, they're good. You know,
yeah.
I don't think they're bad.
No, they're not at
all. I think they're good actors. It's just the writing was bad. But then there were some really horrible bits where, this is spoilers, but you're not going to watch it, where David Spade walks in on Adam Sandler and he's having sex with a blow-up doll.
Right.
And the blow-up doll's stuck to him as if he's got a bonus still when he's sitting inside it. It was really horrible.
Mm.
And they find out that this woman who, for some reason, here's some spoilers, but, you know, please don't watch it. They go... What they do is Adam Sandler and David Spade, Adam Sandler's an FBI agent, he decides to fake their own deaths. And he somehow found two bodies where he's given them fake passports and they're going to take on these two people's identity.
Right.
But it turns out these two people are millionaires who live in Puerto Rico.
Right.
But it turns out that people are trying to kill them for something they know.
Right.
So that's all you know. So they suddenly go to Puerto Rico and they're living in this lovely sort of amazing mansion. And then they go... One of them is supposed to be the husband of this woman who... I can't remember. I mean, there's barely any plot. The beautiful widower.
Right.
And at one point, Adam Sandler says to David Spade, this is what he says, quote for quote, "Are you going to make a move on that?" Talking about the woman. David Spade says, "Geez, her husband just died." And Adam Sandler says, "Then she needs a nice dick to cry on." I mean,
right.
It's just...
I mean, it's not... Absolute, it's trying to...
It's absolutely...
It's like a play on the word pillow, isn't it?
It's,
dick. It sounds a bit like pillow.
It's so offensively sexist.
Yeah.
It isn't... All the women are sex objects.
Yeah, yeah.
And either really pretty and all with her cleavage out. It is one of the most misogynistic films I've ever seen.
Right.
Incredibly offensive at times. And you sort of don't believe that they're saying it, because Adam Sandler and David Spade, you sort of feel you've got an element of trust in them. So yeah. It's quite shocking seeing things come out of their
Who
mouth.
Who wrote it?
Someone called Pappas wrote it.
What, the skateboarder?
Not skateboarder, it's the same name. Let me look it up. I've got here who wrote it. I mean, it's got 5.8 on IMDb and 22 on Metascore.
Don't look it up. I've averaged just now Adam Sandler's last three films.
Okay.
Guess the average of his last three films.
On Metascore?
Metacritic, yeah.
At 20.
22.3.
Wow.
Because he did Pixels, The Ridiculous Six, and The Do-Over.
It's written by Chris Pappas.
Chris Pappas.
And Kevin Barnett. And Kevin Barnett wrote Hall Pass, which is supposed to be awful.
And this is Chris Pappas' first film.
Okay.
And Kevin Barnett wrote, what's Hall Pass?
It's another sort of...
Owen Wilson thing.
It's awful. And what's really weird about this film, so I've gone all over the place, is the discovery that what the two millionaires, the people they've replaced, whose identity they've stolen, aren't bad guys, they're good guys, and the people are trying to kill them. Guess why they're trying to kill them? It's in the slapstick weird comedy. Guess what the story is?
Why the bad guys are trying to kill them.
The good guys, yeah.
Think they're sex traffickers?
No, because... They discovered a cure for cancer.
Right.
And all the bad guys are the pharmaceutical people who don't want cancer to be cured because they're making lots of money out of the drugs.
Sure. I mean, that's hilarious.
It's such an odd and ill-informed choice to make a cure for cancer.
in a film this stupid.
Part of a slapstick, crude comedy film where you've got a grandmother with fake, real tits, with her tits out in.
Yeah, yeah.
And somehow they've crowbarred a cure for cancer in it. It's so poorly done.
So what you're saying is the people who wrote this or are responsible for it, because it may not be the writers, their script could have been gold, and then by the time it makes it to the screen, not a single word survives. That's always possible.
Yeah.
We can't just blame the writers. The creators, everyone involved in this film, you're saying has not a drop of soul left, basically. Because when you just sort of cram in anything with sort of meaninglessly, it's because you don't have any taste, isn't it? You're just like, oh, some stuff was put in. I don't care.
But it just does feel like
I'm numb to life. I can put cancer and demean women and dick jokes and blah.
It feels like a story. It's a film for 14-year-old boys, or even, I'd say that's too old.
Right.
12-year-old boys, written. It feels like it's written by 10-year-old kids. Incredible. But there are a couple of moments where I laughed.
Yeah. Well, because it's got two very good comedians in it. But Adam Sandler's hit rate is phenomenally poor for films. It's almost like he actually just doesn't care. Like, he just... They're for money. I don't know. Because he clearly knows what's funny.
But you... Have you
turned... I mean, in what's the one where he plays basically himself, a comedian, and Seth Rogen's in it? Funny People.
Oh, yeah. I think he's good in that as well.
Like,
I don't know why they're doing it, because they're both men in their late 40s.
Yeah.
It feels like a film where they should be, even if they're 20-year-olds, it would get away with it, but
yeah,
they've got no excuse to do this.
Yeah, it seems sad.
Very odd. But there are a couple of moments of merit in it. I'm fascinated to hear what our listeners, our millions of listeners, think of it.
So you're making our listeners go and watch it?
I give it 2 Marics.
Okay, what's it got those 2 Marics for?
For the one joke that I laughed out loud.
Okay, it's a two-star joke.
Yep.
Wow, so... Oh, this is the second of 4 films Adam Sandler has on a deal with Netflix, after The Ridiculous Six being his first one.
Oh, well, the second album syndrome is always a difficult
film. Even though the first album got 18 on Metacritic, so...
Wow.
Yeah. That's lower than Pixels.
It's jaw-dropping.
Yeah.
I'm surprised at Netflix, really. It just says who's watching it. Maybe Netflix audience are 14-year-old kids.
That's an interesting piece of trivia. I'm just looking through IMDb.
Mm.
In the film Funny People, Adam Sandler plays a comedian/actor whose character starred in a movie called Do-Over that was famously shit.
Wow.
That's weird, isn't it?
I would love to...
This incredible meta joke that he's in a shit film on purpose.
Well, that's what I would love. I was watching it thinking, I would love it if this is actually... If Adam Sandler and David Spade, they made this, and they're making another film called The Do-Over, about The Do-Over.
Yeah.
So they're doing this again. So there's commentary.
Or they're trying to bring down Netflix from the inside because they see it as a force of evil.
But that would be amazing if they made a film so bad and called it The Do-Over and did it again.
Yeah.
That would be a great piece of...
Just keep remaking the same film,
but in a completely different genre.
It would be good. I'd watch that.
Yeah, Adam Sandler and David Spade, Do-Over the Do-Over.
All right, well, that's a Do-Over. I think it's time for this.
Written in. Here is what they said. I'm gonna read it out. This is what I read.
No.
Someone's written in. Here is what they said. I'm gonna read it out. This is what I read. Someone's written in. Here is what they said. I'm gonna read it out. This is what I read.
Here's an email from Rob Marland, and he says, "Hi chaps. In last week's show, David claimed that a cinema full of dogs is better behaved than your average multiplex audience. I am not surprised. I have never understood the appeal of seeing films with loads of other humans. Most audiences are horrible, phone-checking, nacho-chomping pricks. This is why I would like to alert you to the ongoing Studio Ghibli Forever screenings at a picture house cinema near you. I've gone to a few of these screenings in Liverpool and Cambridge, and the audiences are always great. The best thing is, many audience members have clearly not seen the films before because there were genuine gasps of surprise when the cat bus arrived in My Neighbour Totoro and waves of laughter at the gags in Kiki's delivery service. Extremely heartwarming. Also, for any other Ghibli fans out there who are excited about When Marnie Was There, the studio's final film, which is being released this Friday, please lower your expectations. It's boring as milk. Four Robs. All the best, Rob Marlin. Well,
I like milk.
I like milk as well. I don't know if I find it interesting, but tasty. I don't know much about Studio Ghibli.
I've seen it advertised at the picture house, but yeah. I haven't gone along to any of
them. I should watch some more because before I pass judgment on them. You're not a fan, are you?
Not of all the yeah. It's all the Japanese ones, aren't
they?
Yeah.
Nah. Howl's Moving Castle.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Right. Well, thank you for that, Rob. Who else has written in, Marek?
Short Film Sunday. So you can check out the Short Film Sunday website where they post a short film every Sunday. It's very good. Here we go. I hope you're both well. I put a post on Facebook about Call Me Lucky, Bobcat Goldthwait's latest bit of directing. It's on Netflix here in the US, so I had a chance to watch yesterday. I don't want to say too much to spoil it, but seek it out. Without giving away actual plot clues, it's extremely well made, smart focused, well thought out, and touching and funny as well. It's about comic Barry Cribbins, but that so oversimplifies. Just watch it. I'm really impressed with Bobcat transferring over to documentary. I watched Foxcatcher, well, the Foxcatcher one also. Thanks again, and keep watching the films. So we should check that out.
Bobcat Goldthwait, if you don't know, is Zed from the Police Academy films, who has become a film director and writer and is very good. Lizzie Roper, who I recently went to the dog screening with at the Picture House, brought us in World's Greatest Dad years ago now, which is one of his and is excellent. And he's also done others, which are fantastic. I'm trying to remember now. What was it called? Sleeping Dogs? Is that was it called? This is back in the mists of time for me.
That noise in the background is Buddy drinking his water very,
very loudly. Yes, very loudly. God Bless America was another one, which is great. Check that out. Sounds interesting.
Any more emails?
Yes, I think so. It's me, Mario. I'm going to read this one from Ewan McInnes.
Oh, hello.
Hello. He says, I really enjoyed your chat with Justin Edwards about the realities of life on set. That was Justin came in to talk about Love and Friendship a few weeks back. I hope I speak for more Film Fandango fans when I ask for more. I can only offer one tidbit. When I was an extra on Harry Potter, the three main actors used their minders to push in front of the lunch queue when they ordered their chicken and chips. It'd be nice if you could share more of your experiences. I've donated a couple of times, but the next might have to be less due to financial circumstances.
Oh, it's brilliant.
Yeah, it's funny. I shan't ask for a voice. Just a request that we all keep watching the films. P.S. Watched All This Mayhem. Great recommendation. Ewan. Thank you, Ewan. It is fun. We will try and get employed on more films so we can have our own anecdotes to tell. We're trying, I promise you.
That is true, though. When I was a bit more successful in things,
yeah,
you just get pushed to the front of the queue to get your food. So why did We Are Clan? We just go... because we only had an hour for lunch, we were working, they just went to go straight to the front. In front of all the crew and everyone. Well, but normally the extras have to wait until the very end.
They do, for whatever's left. But when you're pressed for time, often a runner will get your lunch ahead of time and just give it to you in your trailer or whatever.
Yeah, they do that.
I'm surprised that didn't happen on Harry Potter. I'm surprised they had to queue up with everyone else, in fact.
They normally just get it delivered. And also, I don't really... Because when you're filming things, and they were it a lot, they must have been up at 5 every day, and you're finishing it. You don't leave. You film from 7 till 7 some a lot of the time, and it's absolutely exhausting.
Yeah, and they don't really want to risk you getting, you know, goat curry on your Gryffindor tie or anything.
Yeah.
So you know, you're treated a bit like a really valuable prop when.
Yeah.
Which is sort of fair enough because they've spent hours on getting you looking like that, and they don't want to keep it that way. But no, we'll try and get more guests on who have actually been in films. How about that as a bit of a sort of half promise?
Oh, be lucky.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've still got a few friends I've never tapped up to be on this, but we'll see. We'll see.
There's one from Christopher Dodd.
What's he want?
Hi, guys. Why don't you turn the show into a TV show you can put on YouTube? As a listener, I think we miss a lot by just hearing your voices. Your facial expressions will make the whole show a better experience. Dressing up, props, etc.
Yeah, we understand.
Will make the show unmissable. And who knows, a producer may see it and you could be on BBC Three in no time at all. Keep watching the films, Chris. That is a very nice sentiment, Chris.
It is.
I mean, if you knew how difficult it is to even get... I can't even get a one-line part. There's no way any BBC... If I wrote the funniest script in the entire world and had it to a BBC Three producer, they probably wouldn't read it.
Yeah, that's true. If we could spend a lot of time and effort, and let's be honest, money, filming this and putting it on YouTube, and the best outcome would be, after a laborious and tedious four-year development process, it would finally get a pilot on BBC Three and they'd recast me and Marek with famous people. That is the best we could hope for.
It would be 2 20-year-old people who've been to see about 3 films.
That's right.
And they would probably be a bit more articulate than me. So
they'd probably have, you know, greater voices and say less. But, you know, good on them. But I don't really want to hand that to them, really.
Also, I've been listening to quite a few podcasts lately, and I think I quite like not having to look at things. And it has been while I've been painting and decorating.
Sure.
But it's quite nice to listen to, not to have all of your... If you're going on a walk, not to have to sit in front of the screen. I mean, if you want to go on YouTube, I have got my own YouTube channel where I regularly make unpopular films, so you can get your fill of me there.
Yeah. Marek makes some of the most unpopular films on YouTube. He's really good at it. Really good.
I am prolific at wasting my time. In fact, only today, I was supposed to arrive an hour earlier. I challenged myself to try and make a short film, which is called 8 Things to Do, or Things to Do on a Rainy Day, in 5 hours. It took me pretty much 6 hours. And so I therefore wasted one of those hours. It was a waste of David Reed's life.
That's all right. That's all right. I mean, I really should be upstairs right now writing a comedy thing I'm being paid to write. But instead I'm here. So that's all. Buddy's not happy about
it. Is that because of me?
I think it might be. He might want you to leave.
Listen, buddy, next time I'll be around on time. Or at least within a quarter of an hour of the time I've said.
That seems to have satisfied him.
Now you watched a film on Netflix, the one that I think I was going to watch and should have watched.
Yes, I watched a documentary film because Netflix is good for those.
Yes,
by and large, I'm very pleased they keep putting new ones on, which means people are watching them because they've got their stats down, haven't they? But I watched one called The Resurrection of Jake the Snake. Or sometimes it's called The Resurrection of Jake the Snake Roberts, which is about the previously WWF, now WWE, wrestler, Jake the Snake Roberts, who, if you were a fan of it in the 90s, when I was, or the late 80s, was massive. He was one of the big ones, right? I mean, were you into it when you were a kid?
I wasn't. Because I didn't have... It was on Sky, wasn't it?
It was... I didn't have Sky. My mate Andrew had Sky, so I saw it once or twice, but I knew it through the collecting cards. Like, I didn't watch the show, but I knew about it from the facts on the backs of the collecting cards and all the photos and stuff.
So when I was... I must have been about 13, 14. So I'm about 6 years older than you. So everyone else in my class seemed to have Sky, and every day they would talk about, you know, Bret the Hitman Hart.
Yeah.
Ted DiBiase, and all
the $1 Million Man. He's in that. He's in this. Yeah, he looks like a post surgery Noel Edmonds these days.
Well, they would just talk about wrestling relentlessly and do the voices, and I've never felt more ostracised in my life.
Oh, that's good. Well, this is basically about Jake the Snake Roberts, famously sort of had a meltdown and fell into alcoholism, basically, and screwed his life up enormously. And this is about a guy who considers Jake the Snake his mentor, who was another wrestler who just sort of was never that popular but worked bloody hard at it and actually ended up being, you know, quite a popular one as well by the end. Him deciding to make it his mission to get Jake back on his feet. And
how do they film it then?
He's also got a guy who is the documentary maker, and he follows them around the whole time. And
so it starts when, sorry to interrupt you, but it starts when Snake Roberts is still struggling with alcohol, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, if you've seen the film The Wrestler.
Yes.
It's a lot like the film The Wrestler. And so I wonder if this is actually a trope for guys who are wrestlers in their youth, who their bodies become so beaten and broken from the abuse they give them that they end up taking painkillers or drinking alcohol to numb the pain when they hit their 40s, well, 50s, you know, 50s and 60s. And
well, I said about before, I sort of said with American football, I follow lots of people. I mean, San Diego Chargers offensive line, mentioned before, famous for the suicides and all the concussion related stuff.
Absolutely. I mean, it's the story of Jake the Snake, it is, but they also approach Razor Ramon, who I don't know if you remember, but he looked like a sort of, he was always a villain, he was a bad guy, he was sort of this greaser, Italian greaser, who always had a matchstick in his mouth. And he's still got his hair's all balding, it's the same hairstyle, but it's all balding. And he's enormously obese, but still has the matchstick in his mouth. And they try to bring him back, because his life's gone off the rails as well. It's a very touching and surreal look into that world, and specifically into alcoholism and what addiction is to the person suffering from it and all of this. And it is good. It's not quite the story you hope for. They have to sort of overemphasize some beats to make it seem like alcoholism has a triumph. Do you know what I mean? Like, it does have a story, but there's a bit of it is a bit propagandary, because the guy who's getting Jake back on his feet runs this sort of centre called DDP Yoga, where he gets people in shape and back in their lives through doing his yoga things. And him and anyone who works for him wears big logoed DDP yoga t-shirts all the way through. And it's basically about how his program helps people. So it's a bit like a 90-minute advert for his thing. But if you overlook that as being just sort of inherently American, in terms of just like, hey, it's deeply commercial, what's wrong with that? It's actually sort of fascinating. Especially when these figures are all familiar from my youth, and you see them now and you go, fucking hell, look at these guys, you know. And it's such a weird world, because they all loved it, absolutely loved their life and their lifestyle, even though it's sort of bodybuilder theatre.
Yeah.
And yet they were putting their bodies in enormous danger, you know. It's worth a watch. It's a fascinating little insight.
Have they got lots of old footage then in it?
Okay. They do have, you know, the footage of Jake the Snake getting his massive constrictor snakes out of a bag and dropping them on a wrestler's face and all of this stuff.
Worth watching then?
Yeah, and you get to see where his own personal demons come from and his pain. And you get a real insight, you do. there's moments where you go, their entire lives have been faking what they're doing. Because I've been around real wrestlers a tiny amount, from the ones who did the wrestling at the Edinburgh Festival, where they did a sort of WWE wrestling match. They've done it a few times now with half comedians and half actual sort of touring professional wrestlers, and they don't talk about it being fake. So even amongst themselves, they talk about it like it's a sport. Like, of course, they all know, because they all know the cues and the blah 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 and how to do it all, but they talk about it like it's real. So there is part of you where you go, is this story real? Or is this just more sort of theatre? But yeah. I think it all is. It's a way where these guys have a manner, which I think is also partially being American, where it all seems so self-mythologizing and fictitious that you don't really know if this is actual genuine insight or whether just another layer of bullshit. But it's fascinating as a sort of window into this very odd world, sort of quite Louis Theroux-esque.
How many David should give it?
I think I'd give it 6 or 7. It feels very much like a TV movie, not like a movie.
Not like All This Mayhem then?
No. All This Mayhem has some genuinely surprise turns and
it's
stuff.
It's
like,
great.
Yeah,
I get
really
that. Stay
good
with me. That
yeah,
really
yeah.
That.
But this is just seeing what happened to those people you sort of wanted to be and pretended to be when you were a kid, and to see them now sort of. You feel sort of grateful to the fact they did this to themselves just to have that world exist, you know. And it's touching, it's moving, it is good.
I think it's interesting what you said earlier about Netflix being a really great home for documentaries.
Mm. Because documentaries haven't a hope in hell of getting a cinema release unless they're about a specific topic that, you know, a successful cinema release, I mean, you know, general release, unless it's a topic that's sort of already explosively popular or whatever. But they are some of the most moving stories being told in the medium of film at the moment.
I think because you're shooting so much footage and you're editing it, it's not necessarily cinematic.
Yes.
So you can watch it.
Well, also, you can't. It's not been created by a writer who's been brought up on previous films and actors who've been brought up on previous actors' performances. It's just people being that weird, real self they are when we're all out and about. Mm. So it's cliché-less, really, which I suppose is very refreshing when we have so much entertainment culture to consume these days. You know?
I think as you get older, I just find myself more and more drawn to documentaries.
Yeah.
Just because of the honesty in them.
Yeah, they have their own conventions, of course, and storytelling tricks that you go, oh, okay, you're playing me now a bit. But no, I'm certainly enjoying them a lot. So I'd track this one down if you fancy. It's worth a look. The Resurrection of Jake the Snake.
Well done for that, Netflix, but not well done for the do-over.
Yeah, 1 out of 2. 1 out of 2. Well, that's it for this week. If you'd like to get in touch and tell us about anything, a film you've seen maybe, or an old favourite we've never talked about, then go to our webpage, filmfandango.com, and fill in the form there and we'll get a message.
And David recently put up his amazing artwork, which is all of the posters from
the casting game.
Yeah, you can see the previous casting games.
Yeah. It's a lot of them I've faked photos or posters for. It's quite fun. So yes, if you'd like to look at those, go to filmfandango.com as well. And we also do all this for free, so if you'd like to donate towards keeping Film Fandango alive then as well, go to filmfandango.com and follow the links. And everyone who has, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
We'll be back next week. Keep watching the films.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.